Hello and welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am joined by Jason Idaho McClellan.
Hello, Alejandro. How are you, my friend?
Not too bad, not too bad. So I saw some pictures you sent of Idaho and Boise, and it looks really nice. It looks pretty.
It is quite gorgeous, and, you know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, we're deprived in Phoenix and don't really get to experience seasons. Yeah. And although the weather here has been amazing, it hasn't started getting cool yet. In fact, we've been in the high 80s, low 90s, which is quite warm for here. But despite that warm weather, the trees have decided that fall is supposed to be here. So they've actually started to turn colors. So that's something we don't get to experience in Phoenix.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a treat for me to see a different season for a change.
Well, you're going to love that when you get a yard, too.
Oh, yes.
That's the one thing. Even if I moved back to Colorado and I got a house, I would have a Arizona yard. I hate yard work. It takes so much time. And when you're in a green place where there's leaves, oh, my gosh, it is just like a big chore. Even though it looks beautiful. And today is actually the first day of fall.
Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't realize that until someone just told us. Heather, you know, in the office.
Well, I thought it was today or tomorrow. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I saw something about in some other hemisphere that it was starting today, but who knows?
Which is cool. You're recognizing that, and you're experiencing a fall, but of course we're not. It's still 100 degrees out here.
That's right. You would have no idea, but I do see the leaves turning. So.
Yeah, cool, cool. So that's good. At least you're enjoying it. I mean, to me, natural beauty is even though you can really find it pretty much everywhere, it helps when you move to enjoy that. And I always do everywhere I go.
Well, and that natural beauty is why Bigfoot prefers it up here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, have you had some Bigfoot sightings?
Not yet.
Mm-hmm. So, but you're expecting to?
Oh, I totally expect to.
Your little doggies remind me of kind of little Bigfoot. Like the actual, just the feet themselves. Because they're very small, so.
But it's a small community up here, mm-hmm. So. I don't think Bigfoot could blend in for too long. I think I'll meet his acquaintance soon enough.
Cool. Cool. Well, that sounds fabulous. So, a lot of stories. We should get to these stories. I should quit messing around. But I guess first I'll tell people about our guest. Our guest, I'm really excited because actually I've known this guest longer than I've known you, Jason. When I started doing these podcasts as a UFO think tank way back when, this gentleman used to be in the chat all the time, and in fact, when I was going on UFO TV radio and doing the news in the beginning of the show, he was joined in on that, and his name is Angel, and since then, Angel Espino, and since then, he has created, he started doing a show called The Jackal's Head, and then one called Skywatchers, where he talked a lot about UFOs, Skywatchers, all UFOs. And then he started up his own network. So it's called the PSN Network, where he's got a bunch of different podcasts that are on there all day long. And not all of them cover UFOs and paranormal. A lot of them do, but they do other stuff. And in fact, I was on with Nancy and Bill Burns not too long ago, and they're on that network. And I've been going on Angel's show quite a bit to talk about UFO news and openminds.tv. So So I'm really excited to have him on because he's a really cool guy. He's just a good guy. He's I think got a good head on his shoulders, and it's a lot of fun to talk to him about what got him interested in this and about his network, which he re-airs our show on that network as well. So you may be listening to this show on PSN Radio. So pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, one day, hopefully he's going to make it to the Congress this year, the Guinness World Record breaking largest UFO conference, the UFO Congress this year, and so we'll be able to meet him.
That would be cool.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. So let's go ahead and get into the news. There's a lot of stuff, and I should tell people, you know, we missed a show last week because I was sick. It's a good thing you weren't in the office. You didn't have to. Most people in the office got a bad cold here, and so did I, and I felt awful. So I decided to, I just didn't have the energy to do the show. So it's been a while, so there's a lot of news. And why don't you start off with maybe your favorite news story of the past week or so, Big J?
My favorite news story is that you didn't do the radio show so you wouldn't get us all sick over the radio.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for being considerate.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, you know, I keep coming back to these, and this is so cool to have so many of these MUFON UFO sighting reports posted on the site by Roger Marsh. And, you know, there have been some interesting ones as of late. And one that I liked, and I want to hear what you think about this one, Alejandro. This one happened in Florida on September 15th in Ponce Inlet. Several witnesses heard a loud humming outside. Now, this was at night. It was about 10:15 p.m. on September 15th. These people heard this loud humming, so it drew them out of their houses. They heard the noise. They went outside, looked, and saw a low-flying object with lights on, and they saw this object hover and move slowly through the sky. And then they saw it move away and said that at that point it didn't have they couldn't distinguish any sound from it. But this humming object was so loud that it drew people out of their houses and even allegedly knocked out the power at a 7-Eleven that it flew over. Who knows if it actually had anything to do with the 7-Eleven losing its power at that time. But that is the report that this object flew over 7-Eleven and it lost power at that time. But then there was a helicopter witnesses saw in the area for about an hour. So what do you think about this, Alejandro? This is an interesting tale of a humming UFO drawing people outside.
Yeah, kind of weird. I mean, this one's difficult in that it was just lights, right? People didn't see a shape, I think. But it's weird, of course. I mean, could it be some homemade quadcopter type of thing, you think, that was really loud, louder than most? It moved a pretty big distance, right?
Yeah, I mean, they say it moved something like a half mile away or something by the time they got outside. And, you know, what this made me think of, I was thinking, you know, when you're inside hearing a humming, because drones, quadcopters, that type of thing, remote control things, do make a noise that could be described as a hum. But it had to be pretty darn loud to draw people out of their houses. But something that does make a loud, weird hum sound that would make you come out and does move slowly through the sky and hover is a blimp. I'm not saying that's what it is, but it's a possibility. These people probably understand what a blimp looks like, but that's happened to me before. I hear that weird noise a blimp makes. It does make a weird kind of humming sound as it flies. And you go outside and look at it. It's either hovering, flying through the air.
And the weird lights on blimps.
Yes. So that's what I thought of when I saw this.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. And if it did, in fact, affect the power to 7-Eleven, that's bizarre too.
Yeah.
But this is just one example of a lot of interesting MUFON sighting reports coming in lately.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, the sighting reports are always really cool. So that was a really crazy one. And of course, All those North Carolina ones were really cool not too long ago, too. And,
yeah.
And really, that's still being debated. So maybe we'll have some news on those soon, too. But, yeah, Roger Marsh is posting those every day, so people got to go check those out at the website.
Yeah.
So a few other stories. I'll do some to kind of highlight just quick run-throughs on a few, but then a lot of these we covered on Spacing Out, which we posted on Friday, so people could go check it out there. But like Shirley MacLaine, I thought that was kind of cool. Shirley MacLaine talking about her ex-lover, politician Andrew Peacock, who was the Australian ambassador to the U.S., and her going out and UFO hunting with him and at Popocatepetl. See, I could say it on Spacing Out because I had the phonetic spelling in front of me on the screen. But without that, it's hard to say it. I know you can say it. Popocatepetl. Ooh, I got it right.
There you go. You got it.
I want to hear you say it. You do it good.
Popocatepetl.
Oh, good job. And you know what I thought was cool? Shirley MacLaine, when you listen to it, she rattles it off. She's got it down. So she's obviously talked about this place a lot. And it, I mean, she took this guy from Australia out there. And this is, of course, a volcano in Mexico that we talk about often because people see UFO sightings there quite a bit. So that was a kind of a fun story, Shirley MacLaine getting UFOs out there again. But actually, here's one was kind of a bigger story last week, and I want to hear your opinions on this one, actually, and maybe you could add some more detail. But this is the September 12th sighting in California that made a lot of news of just this object that looked like, you know, a missile break or a rocket kind of changing its stages because it had a you know, this kind of gas around it. A lot of people saw it in several different states. And I think it was all the way from San Francisco to Washington, if I'm not mistaken. And however, you know, the U.S. said it wasn't us. And, you know, it wasn't a missile of ours. So I think eventually they said it was a Russian satellite, and the Russians said, no, it's not ours, but the U.S. said, well, it's a secret spy satellite, so of course Russia's not going to fess up to this. But do you have anything to add to that? What do you think of the whole satellite thing?
Was that, in fact, tied to this story, or was that something different?
I thought it was the same story.
Because I know they mentioned the Russian satellite for something seen over Colorado, and I didn't see anything about this object being seen over Colorado.
Oh, well, then I could have it mixed up.
It could be the same. It could be different. The thing that you pointed out, and we've seen in so many UFO sighting reports, that this does absolutely have the characteristics of some sort of missile or rocket, but... Yeah, the experts were saying, that's not what it is. Well, what is it? And, you know, the sources they checked with at the Vandenberg Air Force Base didn't know anything about it, or they claimed to not know anything about it. So it's pretty much an unidentified. It's pretty bizarre. Does look like a mysterious rocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was, they did relate it to the California one, and it is kind of funny because it was U.S. Strategic Command that said it was a Russian satellite, and the Russians say, no, our satellite is that you're claiming it is still up there. And
well, this particular object, you know, it looks like something being propelled, you know, like a rocket. It doesn't look like something entering the atmosphere and breaking up like space debris does. So I'm confused by that.
Yeah, I agree, because it doesn't look like space junk. I mean, space junk, you can, looks like a meteorite or something, or
exactly.
It looks like something breaking up. It doesn't look like this, where there's a gas around it, which is typical of a rocket being propelled, or when the stages break and they emit a gas when they break apart at the explosive separation. So yeah, it doesn't look like a satellite breaking up for sure. So yeah, that's a continuing mystery. But that was a really cool story. That was an interesting one. This, I think, is really cool, too. And just to kind of update people, we had a gentleman named William Hopp on the show, and he's working on a movie called Abductee. The interesting and unique part of this movie is that he is trying to keep it as close to actual abduction events as possible. Unlike the abduction movies we have seen thus far, except for, I guess, Communion, where, you know, they try to sensationalize it and everything. So Fire in the Sky, Fourth Kind, you know, all of these, even that new one coming out, Extraterrestrial, they kind of, you know, try to make it more like a horror thing and don't stick to actual reported events. So it's kind of cool. This guy is actually getting underway. They're going to start filming here in a week or so. They've got some Hollywood actors lined up and everything. So it's kind of cool. When he was on the show a few months ago, he was seeking funding still. But now he's got actors lined up, he's got funding lined up, and they're going to be shooting really soon. So that's pretty exciting, I think. So that's a pretty cool one.
It is exciting, and, you know, it makes so much sense. I don't know why it's taken so long and why so many people don't go this route. But that phenomenon right there is interesting and mysterious enough already that you don't need to make something up. The reality of it already is enough for a movie for it to be interesting and intriguing for viewers.
Agreed. And, you know, when people make it up, it's so cliche, and it's not even, I think, a fraction as interesting as what people really report.
I agree.
You know, so what people really report would be much, much, much more interesting to see. So really excited about that one, that's for sure. I should mention, just because I think it's really cool, too, you know, there's a German researcher, Andreas Mueller, who keeps in touch with us and lets us know about news. And one of his readers actually got a response from the German Space Agency about the sea plankton that Russia says it found on the ISS. And what they had to say is interesting because, you know, they do confirm, they say that there was bacterial DNA discovered. However, they say the methods used to analyze it don't allow it. You know, aren't able to determine whether it was alive or thriving. So those messages that the Russia said it was alive and thriving, they feel are not substantiated. So that was kind of interesting. I mean, it adds to the story, but it was really cool of Andreas to keep us in the loop on that stuff, and we really appreciate his contributions to our website and to the news.
But it does add to the story, and it adds to the mystery as well. I mean, it sort of compounds the mystery surrounding the entire thing.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned when we talk about it, part of the mysterious, what adds to the mystery of this is that there's not much said about it. I mean, there was this original Russian guy who made this statement. NASA said, well, we haven't heard anything from Russia officially on this, and those are really the only two official statements that have come out. Now we have this German one, and I think you were wondering, and I think it's a legitimate question, I think just like the NASA guy was questioning, is this original Russian guy legit? Is this really something that happened or not? And without Roscosmos, the Russian space agency, coming out and confirming that, you know, we don't know. So far it's really just kind of all rumors, but it certainly has blown up into a big media story.
Yeah, it really has, and it's the whole thing is so confusing. I don't understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, NASA, if they are telling the truth, they don't know anything about it, that is bizarre, because there are only a handful of people on the ISS, and some of those people are NASA astronauts.
Uh-huh.
So I don't think it's a tiny, tiny space station.
Yeah.
I don't know how many secret things that those people can be doing up there without others knowing about it.
Yeah, good point. And I should mention one of the reasons to that make the German Space Agency's comment valid is that they also do have an astronaut up there, a German astronaut. So they're, you know, they're keeping close eyes on all of this. So yeah, what a crazy, interesting story, but it's really cool. I think it's an important news that Andreas had shared with us. And then I want to cover a couple more. One more is just a video, a UFO video that I think is really interesting. That was caught in Cardiff. And this was a gentleman who said he was going from Greece to Cardiff. He was essentially about to land in Cardiff when he saw this group of lights off in the distance. He filmed them, and they're really interesting. You see these lights coming on and off. Personally, I had felt that they looked a bit like military flares. And I know, I think I go to that conclusion more than other people, maybe because I see them. I used to see them more, but when I lived over on the south end of town out here, because I would see them over Goldwater. But I see them so much, and these look similar to that. But other people have had other ideas. A lot of people think that perhaps, you know, the plane was angled, and it was so dark out there, and there was nothing else because they were over the ocean, and he actually filmed some boats or an oil refinery or something like that. I suppose that's possible. So lots of ideas of what might have been filmed here. I tried to get a hold of the nearby Royal Air Force Base, which is very near, just a few miles from the Cardiff Airport, to see if they would have any comments on if they were doing exercises, but I haven't heard back from them. So yeah, I think this is kind of a cool story, and it's kind of cool that there's so many people are chiming in with different possibilities. But it's a funny one in that a lot of these possibilities are just as valid as the other, and we don't know for sure.
It is always interesting with sightings like this where, you know, you have balls of light and dark. You can't really determine anything.
Yeah.
I agree with you that they are characteristic of military flares, but I do like the strong opinions of people who have chimed in and even said that, like, specific type of fishing boats they are.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah.
So who knows? I mean, you know, people in different areas know the activity that's seen around there, so that makes sense sometimes with the potential identifications for these things.
Yeah. So that's a kind of a neat story, and the video is really cool. So go check that out and see what you think. And then finally, I want to talk about the story you posted today, because I think these are important. But yet another group out here using UFOs for marketing. They posted a picture claiming it was a UFO and pretending it was. I think they tweeted it. And then later they said it was a hoax, but they had tricked a lot of people, right?
Yeah, we'll talk more about this on Spacing Out this week. But yeah, it's in England, this promotion basically for a sci-fi fest that's coming up. It started early last week, somebody posting a photo, and right away using a hashtag. You know, that's got to be a giant red flag for people. I mean, I hope people still don't fall for this, but every single person who was posting about this UFO was posting on Facebook or Twitter and using the hashtag Pompeii UFO. Then you look through and everybody posting about it was being very jokey about it. And looking even further, they all seem to be friends or be colleagues or, you know, have some sort of connection. And it turned out most of them are part of the same organization, a same group, enthusiasts of the movie Back to the Future. So there was this connection, there was the same hashtag, and the same crappy blurry photo that didn't really identify anything. But
yeah.
Yes, then both this group as well as the organizers of the conference came out today and said, hey, it was our viral marketing effort. So,
yeah.
And again, Alejandro, we talked about this before with the silly UFO that was used. Where was that? In Canada?
Canada.
Yeah, they used that for promotional purposes for their museum. The UFO they flew, they created a physical UFO and flew that during a baseball game. But we talked about this before with that. This is a terrible marketing initiative in my mind. It doesn't work. How does it work? Yes,
yeah.
It generates headlines about the UFO, but beyond that, it doesn't promote your event.
Yeah.
Because yes, media outlets are going to latch on and run stories about the UFO. They're not going to come back later and say, oh, guess what? It was for this event. No, they don't care at that point. It's done. The story is done.
Yeah.
So you're promoting this one UFO photo you took or something, that's all that's getting the attention. So your marketing efforts fail.
Yeah, I agree. Unless
in your hashtag that everybody is posting has something to do with that event.
Right. Well, and I think if it makes your hashtag popular enough, then people are going to look at everything that's made with that hashtag, and then when you finally start talking about your event, more people will see it. But I don't think a lot of people are following this individual hashtag like they are the media stories.
And when that hashtag is trending, that's before the announcement is made.
Right.
So after you've worked up this momentum, that momentum is gone by the time the announcement comes. Yeah. It's all for nothing.
Yeah, I agree. And you've got a good point, because this hashtag technique was also a part of that Canadian thing. So I think you've got a good point in looking for that as a red flag in these situations.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, and it does so much damage.
Yeah.
For the legitimate research of UFOs. It's really frustrating.
Yeah, it is frustrating, those sons of guns. And in the last spacing out, we talked about the NSA file, so people can go check that out. We talked about other sightings, including Shirley MacLaine at more length, so you can hear more about that on Spacing Out. And also, Jason covered another hoax, and this was in New Jersey, and he did a great job analyzing that and showing all of the information and some videos related to that one. So I really liked your segment on Spacing Out. I always do, so that's really cool, so people can check that out on our YouTube. But that's it for the news.
Check out Spacing Out. Yeah, we got more news on Spacing Out, so do check that out. Alejandro is fantastic on Spacing Out as well. Good job, buddy.
Oh, thanks, man. All right, so that's it for the news. Thanks for joining me there, Big J.
It is always my pleasure to join you for the news, my friend.
All right, well, let's talk to Angel and see what this dude's got to say. I am very excited to have on this guy. His expertise is being our radio chat commenter. That's his specialty. Angel Espino. Actually, I'm just kidding. You do a lot of stuff. And this is kind of cool, yeah, because I met you with UFO Think Tank, the other radio podcast I did, and you would come in and chat and, you know, get real heated and debate, and it'd be a lot of fun. But now you not only do a podcast, you run a whole entire network of it all UFO stuff on – it's the PSN radio network, I should say, public service network, right?
Public streaming network.
Oh, I'm sorry, streaming.
Yeah. No, it's not your fault. We actually were public service network for a while, and when we first started the network, and then I started looking online to get it all official and get the licensing and stuff, and then I noticed somebody registered before me, public service network, but they were doing something else, like children's programming on video and stuff like that, so I had nothing to do even similar to what we do on the network. So in quick thinking, I was like, well, I could turn the service into streaming, and it'll be perfect. And it worked out. Everybody loved it. Public Streaming Network has been like that for the last year and a few months.
Yeah, that's a great title. That's a great title for you all.
Yeah, and the thing is, look, we don't only do ufology-based stuff. I have a UFO-related show, as you know. You've been on my show, Skywatchers Radio. I also do a show on Monday nights with Bill and Nancy Burns, Future Theater. So, you know, I do touch on the subject a whole lot because it's one of my favorite subjects to cover. It really is. But the network is very open to other things. You know, we have comic book-based shows, political-based shows, music-related-only shows. So it's really like a nice mixture of just a little bit of everything for the listeners who like to have variety. Variety is a spice of life, mm-hmm. Isn't that right, Alejandro? So
yeah, and it's fun. I mean, then you get to kind of BS about your favorite topics all day, right?
Correct. And that's one of the reasons I love doing multiple shows. I do a roundtable show with just a bunch of geeks like myself, because at heart I am a geek and I love all kind of geek stuff and geek culture, mm-hmm. and stuff. We geek out. We talk about movies, books, you know, comic books, mm-hmm. Graphic novels, all kinds of cool stuff. And then I have my more serious shows, like I said, Feature Theater, which we talk more political, ufology-based stuff, paranormal stuff. And Skywatchers Radio, which I do on Dark Matter Radio Network and on PSN. We simulcast that show. As well, by the way, I should say Future Theater. We simulcast both shows. But Skywatchers is just all UFO-related, and it's a very serious show. I mean, we goof around a little bit on the show, as you know. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a goofball on the show. But, it is serious on, you know, taking the matter and the subject serious, because at the end of the day, I am actually a serious ufologist wannabe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, I want to be a researcher in the UFO community, but I'm not you, unfortunately. You know what I mean? I don't have like that kind of credentials, and I'm still kind of novice at this. But at heart, that's my goal, is to take it seriously and make sure that the audience is listening, knows it is a serious show, and we interview just about, you know, some of the best in the field of ufology. So,
mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's because I take this field so seriously. That's why I don't goof around. You know, no messing around.
No messing around with Alejandro.
No messing around. Actually, and I wonder if you get this, because I used to get this, not so much because anymore, but people would get mad that I'd joke around. They'd be like, this is a serious field, and I can't believe you're joking around, you son of a gun. And do you ever get that?
You know what? I've gotten that a little bit in the past, but I haven't really received too much of that. And I think it has to do just with the fact that all my shows are consistently like that.
Yeah.
So you either like it or you don't like it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And if you don't like it, normally I ignore the people who come at me with anything hateful. So I maybe they send it to me and I haven't even really, you know, registered on my radar. Mm-hmm. So, but honestly, you know, for me, it hasn't really been that bad. I think it's also because of the diverse nature of the network itself. You know, I've made a lot of people fans to the show, Skywatchers. They were never into ufology to begin with.
Cool.
Which I think that is cool, because now you're introducing a whole field to somebody who wasn't really interested in that. And it's something, again, that I think it's very important, because honestly, the most important question in all of mankind is, are we alone?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're one of those guys that, which I think is cool and I admire. It's like, you don't like seem to be self-conscious about your interest in UFOs whatsoever. You're just like, hey, this is a big deal. This is good stuff, and you got to check it out.
Oh, you know, it's funny you say that, because, I've had instances like, you know, I have a job like everybody else also, and I've had instances where, like, the boss finds out that I do a UFO-related show, and, you know, that conversation comes up, and I have no problem saying that I believe in the subject, and I think that we've been visited. I have no, you know, I'm not a crazy person by any means. And people know that, they know me. So when they see that, you know, this is somebody who is not crazy and he believes in the subject, they tend to take that a little bit more serious also. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the field is not all full of crazies like they want you to believe. You know, don't believe the media. It's not all full of crazy people and just insane people who are seeing planes and they can't understand that plane is, you know, not a UFO. It's not like that. There is a serious subject here, and there is, you know, really real research that needs to be done in the field of ufology. And I command, and, you know, honestly, I applaud researchers like yourself and, you know, people that bring the stories out to the public like yourself and open minds, and people like Nick Redfern, who writes, you know, books on the subjects, and Bill Burns, who's written a lot of books on the subjects. You know, these people who've done research and have gotten, you know, the stories that are out there to the public, and done it in a way that, you know, that it's as honest as possible. And, you know, I have to applaud those people. Yeah, there is a lot of goofballs in ufology that really, you know, are faking or hoaxing or whatever. But that's in just about every field. You just got to navigate through whatever, you know, that BS might be to get to the real meat of what's going on.
Right. I do have a question about the how PSN Radio started, because I can't remember right now if did you start it ground up or did you inherit it?
No, I started it ground up. What happened was a few years ago, now we're going back, let's see, 2009 when I started doing internet radio. I started off on Blog Talk, of all places. And I had a friend of mine, Jeremiah Greer. I don't know if you're familiar with Jeremiah.
Hmm.
He had a show called Shadows in the Dark. Fantastic show. He doesn't do it anymore, unfortunately. But he contacted me one day after hearing a couple podcasts that I had done for Blog Talk. And he goes to me, you know, you should join our network. It's Tenacity Radio. You should, you know, come over and join our network and be part of what we got here and leave Block Talk behind. So I started, you know, thinking about it, and I decided, you know what, I'll go and do that. And I started working on the network with him on their network, but some of their rules was just a little bit too, you know, iffy for me. There were certain people they didn't want to have on the network. You know, they were not so much censoring, you know, material, but they were censoring subjects in general. Like, they didn't want it. For example, if I wanted to have somebody on for the Nazi UFO connection, they wouldn't allow it because they didn't want that kind of talk on the network.
Really?
So it was very restrictive to the kind of subjects that I could bring on, and I was trying to do a UFO-related show.
Yeah.
So, you know, at that point, I was talking to a few buddies of mine who had a show called Unraveling the Secrets, which is on PSN Radio. still. And, you know, we were discussing about possibly putting together our own network. And originally, PSN Radio stood for Paranormal Soup Network. When we first started out, that became kind of like the name everybody, you know, agreed to go with. And then one day I started talking to them about, well, being a little bit more diverse because that would pigeonhole us into the paranormal subject. And, you know, ufology kind of falls into that category, but paranormal is more spirits, ghosts, apparitions, you know, that kind of stuff. And, you know, Bigfoot, you know, mysteries, you know, that are not so much UFO related.
Right.
And you know, I talked to them about maybe diversifying the network a little bit, and that's when we came up with Public Service Network and changed the name, but kept the PSN because we already had the URL psn-radio.com. Mm-hmm. So we were like, well, we paid for it. It's paid for 5 years. Might as well keep it, you know? So we kind of just changed the overall branding of the network. And really, we've been going strong since 2010 now.
Yeah.
So it's doing very well. The numbers have been picking up a lot. We have fabulous shows on there. Like I said, Future Theater's on there. Skywatchers Radio's on there. My Tuesday night show. DC, you know, I don't know if you ever heard of Crystal Storm.
No, I'm so bad with names. I hear, so I may have, but I can't recall right now.
She's a fabulous writer. She wrote a book called Synarchy. It has to do with UFOs and aliens. Really, really cool. Good stuff. And she does a show there on the network also. It's called The Plucky and Woo Woo Show. Shout out to them. You know, really fun stuff. They deal with UFO politics, comedy stuff. You know, it's very diverse, their show. And that's really what we like to push, diversity. You know, we have all kinds of different shows. But at the same time, you know, the only thing, the main rule for the network is we want all the shows to be serious and for the host to take it as serious as possible. Even if they're, you know, shows a little bit more on the comedy side, it's professionalism. It's still a show. That's another thing. You know, when you're doing radio, you got to understand you're still entertaining. You know, at the same time, you're trying to put together a subject matter that people could understand and, you know, something important that you want to teach them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you have to be entertaining to keep their attention. So that's one thing that I definitely push on the network is making sure everybody's as entertaining as possible while giving their message or whatever it is they want to talk about.
See, and that's what's goofy about me is the entertainment is kind of a something I – it's a byproduct that is kind of a not an intentional one, but one that I can't not do. I am those guys who are like, you got to be serious. When I started doing this, I'm thinking NPR because I listen to NPR all day or a lot during the day, which is very straight news, you know, which was the plan, but. But, of course, people love entertainment, and you want to be yourself when you're doing this stuff.
It just comes out more real. It really does.
Like, yeah.
And this is funny, Alejandro. I've had guests on my show, big-name guests, who tell me, well, what email can I send you questions for your show? And I tell them, oh, don't bother. I don't like doing that either. You know? I think the more real you keep it, the better it is, and the audience gravitates to that. You know what I mean? I've had many people, you know, compliment me recently just for Future Theater because of, you know, the way I present my shows because I try to keep it as honest and real as possible. And that's, I think, connects better with the audience.
Yeah,
I agree. Have fun with it. I mean, you really have to have fun with it. I do all kinds of goofy stuff on the shows because I try to keep it, again, entertaining.
Yeah.
That's super important. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I also love the diversity aspect. I think that is really important, that we don't pigeonhole ourselves because, you know, we're all individuals with a variety of interests and everyone is like that. And if we try to say UFOs doesn't belong in the gamut of the mixture of just typical topics out there people are interested in, then we're kind of separating it and we're making it more less accessible. But it should be in the mixture along with everything, you know. Every radio station, you know, might as well have a UFO, especially talk at show, because it's like, you know, it's one of the topics that everybody's interested in. So the more that we mix it up with everything else, the more it becomes a normal everyday topic.
You know, and that's funny because other than, you know, Coast, which is on AM radio, it's very hard to find a UFO-related show on AM radio, which it boggles the mind because there is an audience for this thing, and the internet is showing you that. Yeah. So I'm surprised there's not more shows on AM radio that deal with the subject.
And I know why, because, you know, we were on AM radio for a while there.
Right.
And, well, and you listened because we'd stream it back then. But, you know, it's really hard to find advertisers. Advertisers don't want to often, at least back then, that was, you know, 2009 era too, didn't want to advertise with a UFO kind of show. But they didn't understand, I think back then it was, I think really personally, and we'll see if you agree, that as in the last 5 years, this topic has gone a lot more mainstream. I mean, look at all the TV shows we have right now.
Oh, I completely agree. I would even go back the last 15, 20 years, it's gotten more mainstream. I mean, Independence Day was huge, the movie. You know, look at the big movies that are in the top 5 or the top 20 at the box office domestically or worldwide.
Yeah.
Most of them, I would say 80, 90% of them have UFO-related subjects. The subject is popular worldwide. And out of 100, the honest truth is that the population globally believes that we've been visited. You know, it's not just the crazies who believe this. It's not just you know, the rednecks in the woods drinking moonshine. No, there's people all over the world that believe that we've been visited, believe, you know, in some of this stuff. And look, you, like I said earlier, you have to navigate through the BS to get to the meat of what's going on. But, you know, it's pretty clear something is going on. And I think in general, we've learned to accept that as a society. I think we're ready for, you know, more open and honest discussion on this topic, which it always drives me crazy when, like you said, advertisers find it hard to advertise into something that most of the planet at this point believes is true.
Right, right. Yeah, it's really frustrating. It is, and I think that will be the next. I think that will be a big deal. Is once advertisers kind of breach that and are willing to take that risk, then once they want to advertise with these sort of things, then I think we'll see even a bigger proliferation. Because right now, it's just, you know, there would be more radio shows. We would probably be on AM radio if there were advertisers who were willing to commit to something a little more controversial. Well, which is funny because they'll go, you know, on these highly controversial political shows and advertise and catch heat for it a lot of times, whereas they're afraid of UFOs. It's sad. So I want to ask you, how did your relationship with the Burns, and just for my listening audience, because we're going to have one, if not both of them on. I want to have them on individually on our show, and I haven't yet. Because like Nancy said, even when we were on the show, she was like, you guys don't like us, right? You guys used to not like us. Which was never the case. Never, ever the case. Because they run UFO Magazine, which was our competitor, our only competitor, really, when we had our magazine out there. But we've never... Right. We're not like that in the office here. We're not haters. So, but the Burns, yeah, they've
the
ran
awesome.
UFO Magazine for many years. It was the magazine out there. They are a power couple in ufology. How did you partner up with them?
You know, it's funny. I've known Bill and Nancy offhand kind of for about 3 years now, 3 or 4 years. Just through another person. Like I've communicated them with them once or twice. Nancy used to send me UFO Magazine every time they printed out an issue. And, you know, I'd never really had them on the show out of respect for something that had happened between another person who was producing for them at the time. Back in December, they were without a producer. Something happened that came up and they lost their producer. And they asked me if I'd, you know, join their show and help produce their show because technically, you know, they don't know how to work. You know, the production side of it. And, you know, I love Bill Burns. I've been a fan of Bill Burns for a long, long time since UFO Hunters on TV. And I've read just about every book that he's written. And he's a fascinating human being. I mean, the guy is just a phenomenon into himself. You know what I mean? The guy knows more about everything related to UFOs and paranormal and conspiracies than just about anybody I know. So as soon as they asked me, I was like, of course I'll help you. You know, it's a no-brainer. And I just started, it was back in, I believe, mid-December of last year, when we started doing the show together. And, we've been, ever since been rocking and rolling on a feature theater, man. It's a fantastic show. It really has grown, since we moved it. It originally was on Saturdays. We moved it to Monday nights at 8, Eastern and 8 p.m. Eastern. And, it's just, been growing ever since. It's a fabulous show.
And so at that point you brought it onto your network?
Well, yeah, back in December, they already had joined the network, PSN Radio, and they hadn't joined Dark Matter yet. They joined PSN before I took over as their producer. Once they had, you know, the issue that came up and their producer wasn't involved anymore, the network, but at this point they didn't have a way to produce the show. So that's when I stepped in and started working with them. It's just kind of one of those things that just started, just happened, really. And like I said, I've known Nancy and Bill offhand, through another person for a couple of years now. So they've known of me, and I've known, kind of known them, but it was more like an acquaintance issue. Mm-hmm. But since December, they're like, honestly, they've become like almost like a second family.
Cool. That's great. Right.
Yeah, they're really, really great people. So, mm-hmm. I have nothing but great things to say about them.
Yeah, cool. Well, that's really cool. Yeah, I was curious about that. I do want to ask also, kind of go back into the past and to young little Angel running around the barrio.
And, should I lay down on the couch?
Yeah.
Do a little hypnosis therapy? And
get a box of tissues.
Okay. Okay,
this might get emotional. No, how did you? When did you first get interested in these topics, or were you always?
Well, that actually is a good question. It started when I was around 9 years old, and it was actually a sighting that I had out in California. I was living in Oakland at the time. I lived there for about maybe 6 months, and I was outside playing with a couple of my friends, and I saw a light in the sky, which was not an airplane. It was just sitting there, and all of a sudden it just shot straight up into the air and disappeared. Right. And I saw it. My friend who was with me looked over, and he just saw the streak going straight up. And I didn't know what it was, and I freaked out. I ran into the house, and I told my dad and my mom. They thought I was crazy. And, like parents, they didn't know anything about the subject, so they're like, you're just seeing things, But the funny thing is, there was a streak. It left a streak going straight up into the sky, and it disappeared. And that kind of got me interested. And then years later, when we moved out to Florida, out here in Miami, I had a second sighting. My father this time was present. We were watching TV, and right out of the window, I saw a ship. I would say a ship. I mean, it was a light in the sky, but again, it was just dancing in the sky. And all of a sudden, it just disappeared. It didn't shoot anywhere; it just vanished. Hmm. And my dad was looking at the window, and he's the one that told me, "Look at the window." And I looked over, and we see this thing just vanish and disappear. That's when he was like, "Well, maybe there is some truth to this stuff, because that's not an airplane. Whatever that was
wow."
And the funny thing is, while that happened, I was interested, but I would never really got obsessed with the subject until I saw the movie Fire in the Sky.
Really?
That movie completely changed my life. And I understand, I read the book and everything. Travis's book is fascinating. What he wrote in that book is completely different, than what happened in the actual in the film, what they showed in the film. His story is much better. Read the book. It really is much better when you read what he wrote down. But the movie itself, just the seeing somebody who went through an experience like that, and watching that on the big screen, my father took me to see it because he was really interested in that subject, because he remembered it in the 70s when it happened. He had read about it, and he wanted to see the movie, and we went to see it. And that movie literally changed my whole life. After that, I was obsessed with ufology. I wanted to learn more, started reading more books about the subject. I got my hands on some string theory books by Michio Kaku, and just I got more into science, into like the whole the whole field. And really, I thank Travis Walton in that movie because of it. What I'm doing today is really, in part thanks to him, and thanks to people like Art Bell for doing his show, because honestly, there was no outlet for a person like me who was interested other than reading books on this stuff. So as soon as I found Art Bell on the radio, I was like, oh my God, this is the man right here who I'm going to spend my entire night listening to for the rest of my life. This is amazing. And it was just great show after great show after great show. And I was a fan of his for a very, very, very long time. And, sadly, he left the airwaves, years ago. And there's been that missing element on radio. And it's really been Art Bell who's been missing from the scene. When he comes back, and he will be back soon, I mean, it's going to be just a great thing again, because he really is the voice for this field, I feel. And, the shows that we do are inspired by what he did, And I try to do, I don't imitate, but I do give him credit for a lot of the stuff that I do on the show, because in a sense, he did inspire everything that we're doing now.
Yeah. Well, that would be great if he comes back, and I hope that he does, but I'm kind of skeptical, because when he left, it seems like he just, and this recent thing, it seems like he's lost his motivation, maybe, which is, and I could see it, a lot of people do, so I really hope, I guess I'm just not getting my hopes up too much, I hope he does come back, because that would be great. I agree, he was a lot of fun and really cool. So I hope he does.
I'll tell you this much. I'll tell you this much, Alejandro. I have a feeling he will come back probably sooner than people think.
Oh, cool.
And here's why I say that. You know, his hunger for the subject has never ended. As we know, you know, Art Bell had his personal problems. You know, his wife passed away, and you know, that took him away from the scene for a little bit. But, you know, he still has a passion for this thing. The only reason he came back was because of the love for the subject and wanted to talk about it.
Cool.
What happened with him in Dark Matter Radio on XM, I don't know all the inside info. I'm not an insider or anything like that. I'm not pretending to be from or anything. But from what I know, I can tell you it wasn't so much that he left because he lost his passion. It was more of a creative difference between him and the network that dealt with something very simple.
Yeah,
getting the radio to be played everywhere so everybody can hear. That was his main thing. There were people who weren't able to get XM in their country because it just wasn't something that's available. So he asked them if he could put a player on his website so they could hear it. And they were told no. Now, when you tell Art Bell no and then you let somebody else do that, you know, Art Bell has every right to get upset about that. And
oh, they did. They let someone else do that, huh?
Right. I'm not going to mention who because it's controversial.
No problem.
There was another network that was allowed, and, you know, that's one of the reasons why he had to step away.
Interesting. And
I completely understand. I applaud him actually for doing what he did. I mean, he's right now sticking out to. He has to actually stick his contract out and wait it out until it's over, which I think it ends sometime next year. So as soon as that contract is up, I mean, he will come back. I'm pretty sure. I have almost. Cool. I'm almost. I can almost guarantee it at this point. You know, just from having read stuff that he's written and posted on there online, and now even you know he's friends with me on Facebook, even though we don't communicate much. You know, he does post stuff on Facebook and you know, social media, and he does let people know that, you know, he is interested in coming back. And again, as soon as he comes back, he will most likely take our time slot on Skywatchers Radio.
Cool.
So we'll have to move, so we're just keeping the seat warm for Mr. Art Bell as soon as he comes back. We're moving.
Cool. Well, I have another question for you, and this is around Travis Walton. You know, given he was so important for you and kind of your impetus to get into all of this, what was it like the first time you had an interaction? Because I would assume you met or interviewed him. I'm not sure what your first interaction was.
Yes.
But what was that like for you?
Alejandro, I've been nervous twice my entire life. Once was when I was the first time I was with a young lady and the second time was when I had Travis Walton on my show because, I mean, to me, that was just a phenomenal thing to be able to accomplish in my life.
So you had him on your radio show before you physically met him?
I haven't physically met him.
Haven't? Oh, my God.
Not yet. I'm dying to meet him in person. I've only interviewed him a couple times on radio and spoken to him a few times on the phone other than that. But he is an amazing person to speak to. I mean, I spend a good amount of time with him on the phone, and I, you know, picked his brain on the subject that he went through, you know, on his case in particular. And it's solid. I mean, I don't believe that he hoaxed anything. I believe that everything that he said happened to him. I mean, this man went through this experience. You know, yeah, he's written a book. He's made a little bit of money. But look at his history. The man worked in the same place until recently when he retired a few years ago. You know, he wasn't somebody who was out trying to do the lectures and the conventions and, you know, sell a million books. No, he put his book out and that was, you know, it. The movie, yeah, they made a movie, but he didn't really get a whole lot of money off of that movie. And even to this day, he'll say, well, I actually wasn't too happy with that movie because they didn't get the subject right. You know, they didn't do exactly what happened and what I went through. So, you know, I think that his case is as solid as there is. And when I had him on the show, I'll tell you this much. Not only was I nervous, it almost didn't happen for me because he had gotten – it was funny. I had a troll at the time on Block Talk Radio, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to leave that network. But I had a troll, which you know about, and they contacted Travis and they told him, oh, don't go on this guy's radio show. He's going to humiliate you and he's just going to make fun of you and this and that. And just they try to trash me to Travis. Now Travis you know, sent me an email saying, well, this happened. You know, I'm kind of worried. And I had to call him up and ironically enough – my co-host on Skywatchers Radio, Alan Wyler, which you know, knew Travis because they were putting together a convention down here in Florida called UFO Info Weekend, which never happened. Unfortunately, it would have been a great thing. It was going to be set around when NASA was going to have their final launch. They're going to do the convention right around that time period. I'm pretty sure you you heard him on.
Yeah, I was invited to speak, and I was so excited
to
go because he was going to have all of us go and watch the launch. And yeah, I was really excited for that conference. It's too bad it didn't work out.
Yeah, that would have been a great, great conference. I was going to go to that one, and when I heard that he knew Travis, I was like, well, maybe you could kind of vouch for me because he's a little worried. I explained to him kind of what happened, and Alan was like, yeah, man, I'll call him. And we called Travis on the line, and we spoke to Travis for about 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and you know, he was really nice about it, and he did the show, and I didn't poke fun at him. It was a serious show, and you know, we take the subject matter, like I said, very serious, and he understood that once he did the show, and we've corresponded back and forth, you know, many times after that. He's a complete gentleman. I mean, Travis Walton is one of the nicest people that you're ever going to meet, and genuine, which is the thing that really comes off immediately. When you talk to Travis, it's not that fakeness or that hokiness, like he has a prepared speech. You know, it's like he's very natural, just, you know, he's just a normal, humble person, you know, and he just, that comes off immediately when you meet him and we talk to him, so.
Yeah, and I mean, it comes across when you talk to him, but even it's reinforced when you meet him. I think it's tragic that you haven't met him yet, and I can't wait till you get to meet him. Hopefully you come to the Congress, because he comes every year, because he lives out here, but we're really good friends with him. Of course, in fact, you know, I speak to him on a regular basis, and we get to see him quite a bit, and I'm really excited. This will give a chance, and I don't think you'll mind, to plug this conference he has coming up. Second weekend of November. I don't think many people know about it, because he just announced it, and, you know, kind of, I told him, you need to give people a lot more time than a couple months, but second week in November, which is the anniversary, 39th anniversary of the events, he's having a conference in Heber, near where the events happen. And on the 5th of November, which is a Wednesday, but the anniversary of the event, he's taking people out. And he's also friends with Ben Hansen, and he's out here a lot too. And we're all going out to the place, and I haven't been there yet, where the events took place, and we're going to have, he's going to talk, and there's going to be a Skywatch.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's called the Skyfire Conference. People can Google Skyfire Conference. This is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to go there, and we're going to do some filming, and we'll put a video up, you know, soon after we film it all and everything. But super excited about that. But if you, Angel, cannot make it to that,
oh man,
then you've got to come to the Congress, because you can meet him, because you got to meet and hang out with Travis. It's an enigma. For me, it was like, you know, I'm skeptical with stuff, and it's like, you know, this case sounds really good. I need to meet this guy. And then I met him, and I hung out with him. And even to this day, when we're talking, I'll sit back and just look at him and be like, you know, wow. I mean, I cannot. Over the years, I've spent hours with him, and no flaw, you know, in his story or anything. And
his story hasn't changed since it happened, which is amazing. I mean, look, that's a tall tale right there, that the guy is being honest. When your story is consistent for more than 30 years, chances are you're an honest person about what you're talking about, because we tend to embellish as human beings. You know, we tend to embellish stories. Sometimes we forget details, and when we try to replace what happened, it, you know, comes out a little bit different. His story has remained the same. And like you said, I mean, there's no holes in the story. I mean, it's a very solid story. Like I said, I believe Travis Walton. I really do.
So I want to ask you this. As a host, now that you've done lots of shows, you administrate or produce a lot of shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you do these kind of shows, there's always like those kind of diamonds in the rough stories out there that you're like, wow, this is a fascinating story. People need to know more about this. Fortunately, I can then schedule those people to come talk at our conference. But like, what are some of those cases? Do you have some of those?
You know, there's a few cases. You know, Jeff Willis has been on the show. Chris Brown was on the show recently. I know you're familiar with Chris Brown. You know, there's been a few cases, but honestly, we haven't received a whole lot of new people within ufology that have new, interesting stories to tell. Mm-hmm. We've covered a lot of, you know, the stuff like Roswell. We've had, you know, everybody from Cameron Randall on the show, Lance Burton, Justin Brown, who is also a radio broadcaster, Unified Field Radio, who's really into ufology as well. He's been on the show. Dan Martin, He's a great guest to have on also. Ted Peters, we just run the gambit really when it comes to the guests. Unfortunately, we haven't had that many guests that are brand new with a brand new story to tell. Chris Brown is probably the last one that we interviewed. But years ago, we actually were one of the first shows that broke Laura Eisenhower's case on Skywatchers Radio. We had her on just about before anybody else had her on. And it was a video version of the show too, by the way. And that was an interesting story. Laura Magdalene Eisenhower, by the way, that's her full name. Her story is interesting. I don't know exactly if I'm 100% on board with everything that she says, but it's one of the more interesting cases that we've covered of new UFO-related stuff or, conspiratorial stuff.
We haven't really talked about her case at all on this show. And so maybe you could kind of, just for those that aren't familiar, share what she told you and about her claims.
Well, her claim is that she was approached by the government to take part in a program that had to do with actually going to Mars and teleporting to Mars. And her and Andrew Basiago both have the same story, pretty much. And she said that she was approached on a social media website by a guy who recruited her and had her take part in this field or in this experiment because of her connection with President Eisenhower. She's the great-granddaughter, apparently, or supposedly, of President Eisenhower. And her story is that basically she was recruited to be part of this program to go to Mars, and now she was kind of against it. And it got that part of it I was okay with is what happened afterwards. The rest of the story that she came out with, they kind of threw me a little bit for a loop. She almost made it seem like she was a messiah figure at one point, which that was a little bit more than I was expecting from her story. And
that's what were kind of the details behind that? Like,
it was almost like she was saying that she was trying to make it out like she was Gaia or Mother Earth reborn or born as a human.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it got a little bit strange. See, I'm not a very big on the new agey stuff, star seed, star, all that stuff. Crystal child or, all that kind of stuff really doesn't register with me a whole lot. I'm more of a science facts, more of a researcher in that aspect. When you start telling me that, I'm a star seed from Alpha Centauri, I'm like, okay, prove it. Well, where were you born? In Chicago? Mm-hmm. So how are you from Alpha Centauri? Oh, well, my spirit traveled through the star. No, that doesn't fly with me. I'm just a little skeptical on those kind of stories. And it was something along those lines which just didn't really register properly with me. But as far as the other stuff, I do think there could be something to the Mars stuff. There could be something there because, we go to Mars all the time. And, who's not to say? Well, we have rovers on Mars.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
You know what I mean? So we've
the been rovers. I thought you were saying you go to Mars. Like,
no, I wish I can go to Mars. Yeah, that would sign up. That stuff they had people sign up for. I'd sign up and go to Mars. Are you kidding me? No, but we've been to Mars. We have rovers on Mars. So who's not to say that we, the world, the planet has not had people already on Mars that we're just not told about? That is a possibility. There's all kinds of things that could be possible that we're just in the dark.
Mm-hmm. So you were kind of open to those, but then stuff kind of changed over time. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. Are there any other, unsung heroes in this field that you feel, just because I think you have interesting perspectives on the field and everything, some people who because, for instance, you talked about Ted Peters. Mm. He's not really well-known in the field, but his stuff, I think, is really cool.
Yeah, I agree. Ted Peters, great person to interview also, by the way. Great author. Anybody who hasn't read his book, really check it out. The thing with Ted Peters, though, he does bring a different aspect to the subject of ufology because he tries to connect it with spirituality, religion. There's a lot of things that he covers in what he writes. And there is some truth to a lot of that stuff because I think it is all kind of interconnected in a sense, a lot of that stuff. I think that, for example, UFOs and aliens were at one point mistaken for demons and different kind of creatures here on this planet. We just misunderstood what they were. Mm-hmm. That's my theory on why there's so many lores and legends of different things like leprechauns, demons, hauntings. I think a lot of that is UFO related stuff. And, that's something that he really documents. And, he is a great person to speak to. I like speaking to some of the veteran researchers. So, to me, the standout is always Stanton Friedman, who's been on the show several times. Love Stanton Friedman. He's a great guest to have on. Jason Martell is really cool to have on too. I'm not really sold on the whole ancient astronaut subject as much on some of the stuff they cover, especially on the show, but there's a lot of truth to that as well, and I think there is something there which needs more active investigating by serious investigators, you know, real researchers that can really go in and do the homework that needs to be done in that, because there is some truth to the ancient astronaut theory, I believe. You know, those are really the standouts. I mean,
See, that one causes a lot of problems between me and my girlfriend.
Really, why is that?
Because I'm into ancient astronauts. I'm into ancient technology and stuff. I think it's fascinating. But she's more into... she's more likely to believe that there was some sort of extraterrestrial, or that some of that stuff is evidence of extraterrestrial, and I'm of manipulation or visitation, and I'm much more skeptical in that. It's like, well, there's a number of possibilities there. Like when it comes to artwork, you know, a lot of these shamans and stuff are tripping on something. Some kind of drug, or, you know, they haven't eaten for 2 years, or, you know, that's kind of the whole thing of shamanism. So you could draw some wild, crazy stuff.
Oh,
just because you draw wild, crazy stuff and we don't know what it is doesn't mean it's alien. So that's the sort of thing that, you know, it's one of the points where we will get in some of our, not that we get into big fights, but those will cause some of our biggest kind of arguments where she'll get a little mad at me.
You know what? You're going to love a show that we're going to have coming up on Skywatchers Radio, because we are going to have none other than Michael Heiser on the show. I don't know if you're familiar with his work.
Yeah.
Fascinating person. I mean, I love you know, listening to him talk on the subject of ancient aliens and Zachariah Sitchin and all that stuff. He really breaks down the fallacies in the actual subject of ancient aliens. And, you know, it's true. A lot of it, they give credit to aliens, really was us human beings creating stuff. You know, he goes through Pumapunku and different areas like that where, you know, they give the credit to aliens just because it's the easy thing to do, which it's not even the proper thing to do because there's an explanation for it. And you're absolutely right, Alejandro. A lot of these guys back then were tripping on some great peyote or something. I mean, that's just and it's not a secret. I mean, they, in their own writings, they tell you that they were on medication. I mean, they tell you the kind of stuff that they took. So it's not a, it's not like it's a secret that they were on something. But here's the thing. Even with that said, there is some tangible evidence that something from the cosmos was coming down and there it was interaction, whether it be an old, you know, literature like the Bible. You know, the Elohim. I don't think that means God. If you look at the real translation of Elohim, that means the many gods. I think the Bible, for example, has a very bad reputation of the interpretation that has been done to it. Many people think they're talking about a deity or a single god, but a lot of it is actually dealing with what could be extraterrestrial. And that is something that a lot of people don't take into understanding. Even the Bible, when it talks about the Nephilim, the giants, you know, it's talked in reference as the sons of the gods. You know what I mean? So there's certain things out there that you really do your homework on. It could be lore, it could just be mythology, but a lot of it could be also based on extraterrestrial visitation.
And that's the hard part. Could be, because I mean, even like you could take J.R.R. Tolkien, you know, some fiction that he's written and say that, oh, you know, and maybe in the future he might have been talking with, you know, some real... And we just don't know, you know.
That's the main problem, though, with everything. And look, this is a conversation I had on the George Rodriguez show, who's an AM radio legend, by the way. He's been on AM for over 25 years, and I went on his show one day, and he wanted to have me on because he's interested in the subject, and his show has nothing to do with UFOs, but he's interested in the subject. And he had me on, and he told me, you know, what evidence is there to prove extraterrestrials or UFOs have ever been here? And I looked him straight in the face and I said, well, George, nothing. There really isn't a single proof that I can give you or anybody can give you that says 100% aliens have been here. Everything is what if, could, maybe, perhaps.
It wouldn't be controversial, you know, if we had proof and
exactly.
It would be known.
Unfortunately, that is the case. There is no concrete evidence of anything. Even science, for example, the stuff they tell you or they teach us is all theoretical. The
True.
Big Bang is a theory.
Yeah.
Not a confirmed fact. Yeah, we see the evidence of what could have been the Big Bang, but it's not a really confirmed fact. Right. They say the planet's been here for 4.5 billion years, but nobody's lived that long to confirm that either. You know, that's just an estimated guess based on what they see, but it is still just an estimated guess. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So nothing is concrete. Science in general is really more theories than anything else. And that, unfortunately, is for everything. Even
true.
Dealing with spirituality, religion, you know, you believe in God. Why do you believe in God? There's no proof that God exists. Yeah. What's the proof? I mean, God has never come down and stopped Hitler. He didn't stop, you know, any major crime from happening on this planet. You know, we have free will, they say. Well, that's kind of a cop-out. That's a cheap answer. You know, there's no proof of anything that we all go on everything that's faith-related. That's why, you know, and I've had this conversation many times, Alejandro, ufology has become its own religion because of that. Because it is just like every other religion, is all faith-related. And the only difference between ufology and religion itself is at some point we might be able to prove that aliens exist. But unless you die, there's no proof that heaven exists or the afterlife. You have to die to get to that point.
Yeah.
But there might be a point where we discover life on Mars or on Europa or on another close by planet. You know, it could be microbial life, it could be animal life, it could be something that is more, you know, humanoid like us, but you know, not intelligent, or it could be intelligent life. It could be any kind of life. Life is life, and if we find any sort of life out there, that opens the gambit to life being everywhere in the cosmos. And like I said, I research more of the science aspect, which is funny. When you were on Future Theater, you mentioned that you were more into the science aspect also, and that really is, I think, why we connected so well early on, is because we kind of both share in that we look at it more from a scientific standpoint while still believing that, yes, you know, there is aliens out there. Look, space is, from what we could conceive, very, very large, possibly infinite.
Yeah.
It is unconceivable to think that in a space that big that we're the only planet that harbors life. Mm-hmm. Ignorant to believe that.
It's funny because Pharrell said something like that just yesterday. It came out where he said it's ignorant, and he says he finds it, which is just kind of funny, he finds it amazing that anyone could believe that there isn't something else out there.
Yeah, no, it is. Anytime I've had a conversation with somebody who tells me, oh, that's hokey, there's no aliens out there, I ask them, you know, what are you? Well, I'm a human being. You know, and the larger aspect of the question, what are you? You're a person who is standing up right now on this planet, which is just a little speck in the cosmos, going round and round and round, orbiting a sun. You're telling me that out of the billions and trillions of stars out there, there's not going to be another planet that harbors life? Oh, well, no, that doesn't exist. Well, prove it. Yeah. You're here. Just us being here proves that life is possible on the planets, on the cosmos.
Yeah.
Just by us being alive, it proves that life is possible.
Yeah.
So we got to look at it that way. I think anybody who doesn't look at it like that is just pure ignorance. And this is something, and it's funny, Alejandro, I had a conversation with a very religious person who's related to me, or was related to me, my brother's ex-wife, who we still keep in contact because her daughter, my niece, is, you know, still part of the family. We can't get rid of her.
Right.
No matter how hard we try, we can't get rid of her. But, you know, I had a conversation with her one day when she came over with my niece to visit, and she's super religious. She works for the government, you know, federal government and everything. I don't want to give her a name, not to get her in trouble, but she brought up the subject because she knows that I do the radio stuff, and she goes, you know, what proof? There's no proof of aliens, you know. And she had a, you know, big old cross hanging on her chest, and I asked, well, what proof is there that, you know, God exists? And she's like, well, I believe in God. I'm like, I understand that you believe, but is there proof? Well, of course there's proof. I'm like, name me one thing, just one. She couldn't name anything. And then I asked her, I was like, let me ask you a question. What is God? And she goes, well, God created everything. He's, you know, the creator. I understand that. But in the bigger scale, bigger picture here, what is God? He's an entity, right? Some a thing, a person maybe, or some kind of being, right? She was like, yeah, you can see that.
Not born on Earth.
Right. Here's where I was going with that. This being who is not of this planet, right? And she was like, yeah, he lives on in heaven. Okay, so where is heaven? Well, it's another place, not here. Okay, so heaven is not on Earth. So by the mere definition of what God is, he's an extraterrestrial.
That's so funny.
And she freaked out. I've never seen a person freak out like
that. Really?
She had like one of those moments of clarity where she just looked at me and she just didn't know what to say. She was like, my God, you're right. I swear to you, this threw me for a loop because I was expecting her to come back with, well, no, God is a deity. Or no, but she looked at it and she logically said, yeah, you're right.
That's why it gets frustrating for me, because even
he is an extraterrestrial, but
exactly. That's great. But even people who have, because I respect everybody to have their beliefs, whatever they may be, even if they are really out there, even if they believe they're talking to Arcturus, you know, or they're talking to any of these others, or people following people that have those beliefs, you know, they have their own faith. And right. There are so many people that are so self-righteous. Oh, look at those UFO people. Oh, I can't believe that these people believe this or these people believe that. And it's like, well, you believe, like you just pointed out, you believe in a God. You believe in Jesus. You don't have any more proof of your beliefs than they have for theirs. So why are you allowed to have your beliefs and they're not allowed to have theirs? That's what really gets me, that people disrespecting others for having these wild beliefs. Because it's like, to someone like me who's more agnostic, you know, they're all pretty wild. And I don't expect you to believe all of my wild beliefs, but at least respect people for that. And that's why I think that's what really gets me about people looking down on people that have beliefs in this field. And it's just frustrating, but that's a great way that you pointed that out to her.
No, like I said, it threw her for a loop, and it threw me for a loop, her answer. I was not expecting for her to give in that quickly. But, you know, in all honesty, though, you know, it is frustrating when you have to have that conversation with people because, you know, it's just – the thing is – and that's only a certain element of society. Like I said, I've had many conversations with people that are completely on board and understand there's something to what's going on with ufology. I've had bosses at different jobs tell me, you know, that they've seen things themselves, and on – one of them even started shaking because he got nervous speaking about it.
Wow.
And, you know, I do think that most of society is conditioned to understand that there's some reality to that. And believe it or not, you know, while I don't think disclosure is ever going to happen the way people want it to happen, unfortunately, and my condolences to a very good friend of mine, Stephen Bassett, who does great work trying to get disclosure to happen, and we've had this conversation many times. He's one of my favorite guests to have on the show, by the way.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun, and I agree. He it's great that he does what he does, but it's always, ever since I've known him, and if you look back through the couple of decades he's been doing this, it's always right around the corner. It's next month. Yeah. It's in the next 6 months, and of course, it hasn't happened yet.
God bless him, though. He keeps fighting that good fight, and he is one of the really the most important figures to follow what he's doing, because he really does do interesting and important work in ufology. But I don't think disclosure is going to happen the way he wants it, or the way, you know, most of the people in ufology want it. I think disclosure is going to happen by us, the people, ourselves, by, you know, telling what happened to us and bringing out the subject. You know, look, there's been astronauts have come forward, you know, who've told their story of what they've seen and what they know, and people within government that are coming forward. So it's no secret that it's starting to get talked about more and more by more and more credible people and serious individuals like Edgar Mitchell, you know, somebody like that. You know, these are the people that are going to bring disclosure out to the mass public. It's not going to be the government. The government is not going to do that, because to them, I really believe that a lot of the people within government really don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I really do believe that. You know,
yeah, I agree.
Everything is really compartmentalized within the government. Everything is, you know, especially like stuff like Area 51 has been a smokescreen for other things for years. They might have had some alien technology. I know Bob Lazar, and, you know, I believe a lot of the stuff that he said, even though it's kind of controversial. But look, there's stuff that the government's working on all the time, which is not UFO or alien related, but are black budget projects. And they do stuff that when we see it, we're like, well, that must be alien, because we just don't know any better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it might not be alien. It might be something we created. And, you know, the government might not be fully aware of everything that's going on with the aliens. And some of them might. But here's the thing. The very few within the government that might know are not going to tell the rest of the government. I don't think the president knows, or most presidents don't know. You think Obama's being told anything that's going on with aliens? He probably doesn't have a clue of what's going on. In fact, they asked him at one of the debates if he believed or if anything, and he started talking about, you know, forget about the aliens. We got problems here on Earth.
Right.
His answer kind of tells you, you know, where his mindset
is.
Yeah,
he's got no interest.
He's either got no interest in the subject or he just doesn't, you know, he doesn't know anything, so yeah, it doesn't bother him. And that's a common reaction by somebody who's really either not interested or doesn't know anything. But he doesn't need to know, and everything's on a need-to-know basis. Believe me, there's people within the government that have the information and know what's going on and have the interaction with the aliens. That is a very, very deep part of the government that they don't even need to report to the president. The president is a figurehead. He's a face.
So you believe there are people in the government that are interacting with extraterrestrials?
Oh, I have no doubt about that.
Really?
Not only this government, I think many governments have had interactions. Not all friendly. I'm sure some of them have had, you know, quick interactions, something happened, and you know, they might have recovered a ship or something like that, but maybe no contact was officially made by some
guy. So not like some guy hanging out with Paul in a secret warehouse.
I don't think that's ever happened, but I do think we've recovered crafts before. Like, I think Roswell happened. I think that's a real event. You know, there's been other crashes. You know, Roswell's not the only one. There's been many other crashes, and I think some of that has been extraterrestrial, and we've had recovered maybe bodies and stuff. And there's stories right out of Roswell that there was an alien that survived, and that alien stayed alive for a while. The EBE, I believe, was EBE-1, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, if that story is true, well, you know, we might have had contact with aliens since the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I think could be very true. The problem is, though, all that stuff, since it's such a black budget or a black program, there's no way that people that don't need to know are going to find out about it. I mean, that is one of those subjects or one of those things that they're going to keep very, very tight-lipped on until it starts leaking out by people who are either on their deathbed, which has happened already also a few times.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to come out. And those are the people that when you look at it, they have nothing to gain. They also have nothing to lose because they're dying. You know, what's to lose?
Yeah.
So those people, I think, are going to be the ones that are going to also help bring the disclosure out.
But you know who else I think is doing it? And because we're starting to get to the end here, is people like you and having your network and having, you know, all of these guests come on to talk about this stuff. I think that is kind of like what you're talking about, citizen disclosure, where we're getting people to share all this information. And even on Ancient Aliens, you know, I kind of this Ancient Aliens sometimes, but you know, there is some really interesting stuff there. And I gotta say, I saw Giorgio Tsoukalos. I used to know him real well, but ever since he's gotten big, I don't ever talk to him anymore. He doesn't return our messages. But I saw him at Contact in the Desert, and he is really on his game. He was so entertaining, and he's very good these days at saying, I don't know what this is, but here's what I think. And, you know, to say that this is just speculation, he'll even say, I'm not even qualified to say what this is, but I'm interested in it, and I went and checked it out, and it's pretty cool. What do you guys think? He was great. So I think all of that, you know, is like you said, we have to take it upon ourselves to disclose to each other.
No, I agree. And Giorgio Tsoukalos, I mean, look, when he first came onto the scene, I was like, who is this crazy-haired guy? And honestly, really, at first he rubbed me the wrong way because a lot of the stuff was just, you know, what Eric Van Daniken had been talking about for decades. And I'm not a big believer in what Eric Van Daniken has put in his books. And, you know, I had a problem with a lot of the stuff that he at first was saying. And then I think he noticed, Giorgio Tsoukalos noticed, that something, he was getting a little bit of a backlash. I mean, he's, let's put it this way, his memes are legendary.
Yeah.
Sure, if you go to
they've Google, made him famous.
Yeah, if you go to Google and just type in Giorgio Tsoukalos memes, you're going to know what I'm talking about.
He is famous now.
He's famous for the memes. So, you know, he, I think, saw that, and he saw the fact that, you know, he was asked questions before on radio, and he didn't know how to answer it properly, or he didn't know that subject. Because I've heard him talk about Roswell, and he has no idea what happened at Roswell. And that shocked me when I heard that on a radio show. I was like, how is this guy who's, you know, so big in ufology now not know about this case, which is such an important case in the whole field of ufology? And, you know, now I think because of the little bit of backlash he received at first, now you're going to see him humbling up a little bit and just saying, you know what, I'm not qualified. I really don't know about that particular stuff. And that's good to see. There's growth there.
It is, because what's great about him, too, he's so charismatic, and he's very funny. He's witty. He's quick on his feet.
He has great hair.
I've always liked the guy. The hair, he never used to do the hair thing. I think he had a bad hair day, and it
that's what it was, I heard.
Yeah. Did good on ratings, and so he kept it. So, but it's made him – he's now – he's famous. If he showed up on a celebrity wife swap or something, I don't think anybody would be just too surprised.
No, and look, like I said earlier on the show, Alejandro, part of what we do is entertainment also.
Yeah.
And he is a very entertaining person.
Yeah.
He's, you know, charismatic, like you said. He's fun to listen to. If, you know, he talks about a subject, he captures your attention, which is, you know, that's very important in this field also, to have somebody like that who's presenting subject matters. I just hope, you know, that he continues his growth and continues doing what he's doing, because we need more people like that within the mainstream. And that's really important for the subject itself, to have people that can connect with the mainstream audience like he has and really bring subjects like this to the forefront. You know, that's what we need more of. And this is, again, why I applaud people like him, or people like Bill Burns, for example, with UFO Hunters, and Pat Oscar and everybody else was involved in that show, because they brought that subject to the mainstream on the History Channel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now look what the History Channel is doing with all these other shows because of that. Because they were the first. They pioneered that pretty much on that channel.
Well, before that was UFO Files.
But it wasn't as big as the UFO Hunters. That show
you're right. It wasn't as big, but that show was UFO Files. Even if you catch them right now, they were great. And I love to always talk about how wonderful UFO Files were, because John Greenwald worked on those, which he did a great job with that. And those, kind of led the way. They were the first, I think, you know, serious documentaries to take UFOs seriously. And they stuck to the facts very well.
Yep.
And that paved the way for UFO Hunters, which, like you said, took it to another level.
Yeah. And now the History Channel, look, they have, three or four shows on the subject? Yeah. Paranormal stuff, which
bunch.
It's the History Channel. What are they doing with UFO-related stuff or alien stuff? But, you know, it is a serious subject, and I'm happy to see a network like that take it seriously and put that kind of programming on. And, by the way, before we run out of time, I wanted to thank you about, you know, over something, Alejandro.
What'd I do?
You know, and you said it earlier, you used to do the show UFO Think Tank, and because of you, I got interested in doing online radio.
No.
And I just wanted to make sure I said that before your show was over. You know, you were the first show that I heard on the internet. It was your show, UFO Think Tank, and I was like, this guy is talking about aliens and UFOs, and look at the people he's interviewing. This is phenomenal. He's like the next Art Bell, man. This is going to be great. And I started listening, going to your chat, and literally that was the first broadcast. It was your shows that I heard, and it really caught my attention. And I was like, maybe I could do this on the internet, and you know, because of your show, I mean, you were really you know, the example that led me to doing what I do now. And I want to thank you and do it on your show, so everybody knows it's legit. It was because of you. You're the reason why I'm here doing what I do today. So thank you, sir.
Well, thank you. That's extremely flattering, and it's wonderful, because I'm sure you feel this way too. It's like, you know, it is a passion. You're going to do it anyway, but it's always really cool and very humbling when people come and say, oh, man, you know, this has been really important to me, and I listen all the time, and it's like, you know what, thank you. Thank you for listening and, you know, patronizing the hard work that, you know, and it is, like, you know, a hard work. It's a passion where we spend a lot of our hard-earned time, and many times, and I'm sure it's with you. It's certainly been with me, much of our hard-earned money to do this. We're not making money. We're spending money.
Like I said, I have another job because I need to make money. You know, if I can make money in ufology, I would not do any other work. This would be 100% of my focus. Unfortunately, it doesn't pay the bills. This is a passion that we have. It's a labor of love. What I do on the radio show, I do it because I love the subject. And I am literally really interested in the answer to, are we alone?
Yeah.
That is really my goal, is to find out. And whether it's by interviewing a 1,000 people and hearing their stories, and you know making my own mind up of what is real and what is not, or it's going out there in the woods and signaling into the sky, trying to get UFOs to signal me back and land and meet me. I'm the type of person, I'm not afraid of being abducted. I welcome it. And this is a crazy thing to say, but I know a lot of people have, you know, crazy experiences. I welcome it, because that would give me the answer that I seek.
Yeah. Well, and that's you know, what kind of drives me. I don't even know if I've ever said this on the show, but they're out there somewhere. And at some point, first contact will happen in the sense that, hi, I'm a human, you know, you're an alien, in a public and, you know, open way. Two civilizations, or maybe a civilization, our civilization, meeting a federation of civilizations, it's going to happen. And I think that's what's really exciting is we're going to get there. I don't know if it'll be within our lifetime. Hopefully it is. And we'll be then on the cutting edge there for that. And that's what really drives me to stay involved with all of this. And if it happens after I die, then oh well.
It would be unfortunate. Well, maybe there's a little truth to reincarnation and you can come back and live it.
Yeah, which I hope because, you know, so many of my mentors in this field have, who I met and who were very influential to me, have either passed or yes. are very old and I know will not be around, you know, the yep. next, in the next, well, they're, every year we're losing somebody big and important, it seems like. So, so they've gone their lives.
You're not kidding, man.
Searching.
I interviewed Jesse Marshall III back in December, and you know, right after his father had passed away, his father was actually booked to be on the show.
Really?
You know, I had talked to Jesse Marshall Jr. Several times on private, and you know, we talked about him being on the show, and you know, he was an older gentleman, so it was a little harder for him to, you know, make a certain date stick. We finally got to a date, and he was, you know, ready to go, and then he passed away, and wow. you know, it never happened. So I spoke to his son, Jesse Marshall III, and we ended up having him on the show, and. You're absolutely right. Unfortunately, you know, the people who have come forward with the most important stuff are passing away. Some of the greater researchers, like Lloyd Pye, for example, are passing away. Yeah. Roger Lear, I mean, the work Dr. Lear has done is phenomenal. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, that's human life. We all pass away, unfortunately. And, you know, we are only here for a little bit of time. And I think that's part of the reason why we haven't been told the truth of what's going on, you know, in the cosmos, or why maybe they don't interact with us, because we're here for such a short period of time that in the bigger scale of things, it might be more of a disruption to society. Maybe that's what they think.
Yeah.
Than what really, you know, is needed. Because in reality, you know, we're only here for what, 50, 60, 80 years, 90 years if we're lucky. That's nothing in the cosmos.
Well, and you have a good point in that. And the other point is, you know, you talking about their motivations, people out there, if it were being visited at the other, in that it's really in their hands. We may get so frustrated with our government. Our government should disclose this. Our government should disclose that, whatever. Like you said, they probably most don't know much. So really, disclosure is in their hands, whoever they may be. And so, you know, if there's anybody we should be frustrated with not disclosing, you know, if you believe that they're here right now, is it the they?
Well, you know what? It's funny because I would say the perfect example of what this type of scenario would look like is Star Trek with the Prime Directive. If we were to go into space and travel the cosmos and look for life on other planets, we would have a Prime Directive. You know, we would not disturb that civilization when they weren't ready to find out that alien life existed. We, you know, while most of society believes, I think on a global scale, you know, it doesn't mean that we're ready to see aliens walking on a street next to us. That might still stir up a little bit of controversy, might drive people a little bit crazy. You know, look at the War of the Worlds radio broadcast not that long ago, you know, in the bigger scale of things, you know, under 100 years ago. I mean, that right there tells you that, you know, as a society, we still have a long way to go to get to that point.
Right.
And they might be waiting for us to get to that point. Look, once we achieve interstellar travel and we can travel outside of our solar system on a quicker basis, I think that's when we're going to really find out what's going on out there. And that's when we'll be ready at that point, I think, from a technical level and maybe even from a mental level, because we'll have so much more experience on what's out there. Right now, we know very little about what's going on in space, officially. Yeah. You know, NASA's learning new stuff every day, but officially, they don't know much yet. So that tells you there could be a Prime Directive, and that Prime Directive could still be on phase one where we're not supposed to know anything. You know what I mean? And Star Trek is really a perfect example of that. And I think that we're going to find in the future might be a lot like Star Trek with federations of planets. You know, that all that stuff might be true. Here's the thing, Alejandro. Star Trek has been accurate about a lot of things in science. You know, iPads, you know, smartphones, all that kind of stuff was almost – you know, built because of what Star Trek showed on their shows and on their movies. You know, a lot of technology has been inspired by Star Trek. I think Gene Roddenberry was ahead of his time and maybe knew a little bit more than what, you know, he let on. And I think a lot of the stuff that he put in Star Trek might have been because he might have been told some things. And he's not the only one. Spielberg is another one like that who puts a lot of messages
in his alien movies. If you're right, then, you know, and you know, Star Trek is foretelling and accurate in many ways. That means there are going to be a lot of attractive extraterrestrials out there, so you may be able to have an extraterrestrial girlfriend. How would you like that?
Man, you know what? Let me tell you something. I was telling you to envy you because you have, like, the coolest girlfriend who's into the subject. But if I had me a hottie, even though she might be green like Captain Kirk used to, you know, have on the show, I would not turn her down, no way, no how. I would be the guy with the green girlfriend. As long as she looks good, I'm down.
Yeah. Well, I think we are out of time. We could go for hours and hours, and I knew we would have no problem filling an hour, and I knew we would probably go over. So this will be a longer show. So when you air it on your network, make sure and dedicate a little more time than usual. But thank you so much for being on the show. It was a ton of fun. We'll have to do it on a regular basis because it's a lot of fun, and we can maybe talk about different news items and stuff over that that happens. But I'll be on your show. You know, some more Skywatchers Radio, helping you guys out with some of the latest news. And we'll be in touch. So thank you so much for being on. So, you know, let people know the URLs they can go to check you out and your stuff.
Yeah, Alejandro, by the way, thank you for having me on the show. I mean, this is one of the best shows on this subject. And like I said, I've been a fan for years. So the pleasure really is all mine to be on here. Yeah, you know, if anybody wants to listen to this show also, by the way, on PSN Radio, check us out at www.psn-radio.com. Little dash, as you guys know, is the little key right next to the zero on the very top of your keyboard. Little dash, psn-radio.com. All the podcasts pretty much are there. Alejandro's show, Open Minds, plays there every Tuesday at 11. You guys are on there, your podcast. So this will play on Tuesday night at 11. You're actually our lead-in to our show, Skywatchers Radio, which airs at 1 in the morning from 1 to 3 a.m. Eastern. So you can listen to it right there. You can also go to Dark Matter Radio Network, which is darkmatterradio.net, and listen to us there as well. But really, psn-radio.com is the perfect place to see all the shows that I do and everything that we have going on right now. We simulcast a lot of the shows, so you'll see all the traffic going back and forth between the networks and stuff. And look, if you're out there and you're an interested participant and you want to join up the network and you're interested in the subject, you know, you can hit us up on info@psn-radio.com and send me your information. If you're a host and you want to do a show on there, or if you're a guest and you want to be a guest on a network and you want to be on my show or one of the shows on there, send me an email. We'll put it together. We'll make it happen. You know, like I said, we're diverse. We're a very diverse network, and we're open to every subject and every field, any genre that you guys want to be a part of. And Alejandro is a mainstay as long as he's willing to stay there. You know, his show is always going to be there to listen to. And, you know, we're going to feed traffic back and forth with Open Minds because you guys do amazing work. I'm a huge fan of Open Minds. I mean, the website is phenomenal. The stuff you guys have online is top notch. And, you know, you are really the CNN for ufology. You really have become that, so.
Well, and it's cool you say that because that exact phrase was our goal when we started up. And,
oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so it's really great to hear you say that, you know, 5 years later. so, yep, thanks again, and we will talk to you soon, buddy.
Sounds good, my friend. Talk to you soon.
Thank you so much to Angel for joining us on the show. Remember, you can go to PSN Radio. That URL is psn-radio.com. You can listen to him on Skywalker Watchers. I think he still does Jackal's Head on Sundays on there. And he's got a lot of great shows that he pops in on that are on his network there. So, yeah, great guy. I think you guys will agree. Maybe some of you are aware of him. If not, he's a really cool guy, and I'm sure he's going to be continuing to make more news in this field as time goes on. So thank you so much to Angel. psn-radio.com. And remember, you can listen to Open Minds Radio on the PSN network as well. So thank you all for joining us this week. Don't forget, of course, about the UFO Congress. And, of course, we are still super excited that Guinness World Records has listed us as the largest UFO conference. And they did say Lee Spiegel of the Huffington Post wrote a story about it. So Huffington Post covered it. And they spoke to the Guinness World Records people. And they said that was for 2014. Going forward, we'll see if they can hold on to that designation, essentially. And so help us out. Come to our conference. And I think we're on, you know, so far, it's looking to be another really big conference. We are on track with the number of registrants, which is really cool. And what's really cool about that is right now, we haven't even announced all the speakers, and we're on track to have another gigantic conference, so hopefully you can make it. And we have a couple speakers that are amazing that we're just finalizing our confirmation, and you guys will, it will blow your mind. So I hope you can make it, UFOCongress.com. Of course, you can watch Spacing Out for more UFO news. But to read about all these stories that we talked about, you go to openminds.tv. I also, as usual, want to thank Caleb Hanks for making the open and the close music. You can go to UFO or no, the Clerk Chronicles .com to get some more Caleb Hanks music. It's always awesome. And again, thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you next week. Adios, muchachos.